Hi, listeners. It's David Chen. If you heard our recent announcement here on The Sweet Smell of Succession, you'll know that Tara and I will not be covering the show on this podcast feed this season, but we will be covering Succession in other places. Be sure to check out Tara's work over at Decider.com, where she'll be recapping Succession Season 4. Also, I'm going to give a shout out to her TV podcast, Extra Hot Great. Great podcast that covers TV. You should check that out as well. And I will be covering Succession and a bunch of other things over at the Decoding TV podcast. Check that out at podcast.decodingtv.com. Today on the feed, this will be one of the last episodes we post here on the Sweet Smell Succession feed, but this is the Decoding TV episode where Kim Renfro, my co-host, and I discuss where we left off with the Roys in Season 3, Jesse Armstrong's decision to end the show, where we think things are going for Season 4, what plot lines we want to see resolved, what plot lines got dropped from the show early on, and a bunch more stuff. So enjoy this episode, and you can listen to the rest of our coverage over at podcast.decodingtv.com, because we will not be posting it here on this podcast feed, but you can find it over there, again, at podcast.decodingtv.com, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV, a podcast about television. I'm David Chen, and I'm here to kick off Decoding TV's coverage of Succession. In particular, Decoding TV is going to be covering Succession Season 4, and I am really excited to be covering it here with my latest co-host on Decoding TV. You have heard us recap, review, and discuss House of the Dragon over on A Cast of Kings. You have seen her reporting over at Insider.com. Kim Renfro, welcome back to the Decoding TV Network. It's great to have you here today.
I'm so excited. This is like the ideal follow-up to me from House of the Dragon. There's so many, we'll get into it, but I'm just really stoked to be back in the world of like intense HBO prestige drama with a lot of family trauma.
Indeed. Yeah. I mean, we're so thrilled to have Kim Renfro back here. Obviously, I was such a huge fan of the Game of Thrones House of the Dragon podcast we put together over on A Cast of Kings feed. And so thrilled to have Kim here on the Decoding TV feed, where we will be delivering earlier access to episodes and ad-free episodes if you're a paid supporter at decodingtv.com. And of course, you'll get our recaps on the free feed as usual throughout the course of the week. But Kim Renfro, my question for you is, when I ask you if you'd want to join me to recap Succession, why did you say yes? Other than that you're working with one of the best podcasters of the game, of course.
I mean, it's more like I would have to struggle to come up with a no reason, David Chen. Come on. I love podcasting with you, but also I love Succession. And it is, given that it's the fourth and final season, like obviously now's the time for me to be able to get all of my feelings and thoughts and loves about Succession out into the world. Because it's just one of those shows where like due to various timing or just like not sure where I might weigh in, I haven't like written or covered or talked much with like the general public and gotten into the zeitgeist with Succession as much yet. So I'm super stoked to finally be able to verbalize all the things I love about it. I've been rewatching it during the pandemic. I think it's just, it's one of those really meaty character dramas that just swept me up. And now I'm so stoked to see how they figure out how to wrap up what has been one of my favorite new dramas of late to have been able to watch.
Yeah. I think there's so many things I love about the show. I would say to begin with, obviously the writing is really strong. Jesse Armstrong, I've been a big fan of this person for a very long time. I watched every episode of Peep Show, huge fan of that. And he just has a way with words. He knows how to craft a really biting one-liner, a really biting comeback. Great. And like a lot of name calling happens in Succession, very Veep-esque. And I believe the two of them, Jesse Armstrong and Armando Iannucci, have collaborated in the past. So, the use of language is just really riveting to watch in Succession. The other thing that I like about the show is obviously it gives us a glimpse into the lives of the ultra rich and reaffirms something we all suspected, which is that they're miserable. You know, like you don't actually need all that money, because if you got it, you would still be sad. And that's really what all of us poors want to hear, right? Like,
indeed,
that money would not solve your problems. And I like that that is, I think, at the core of one of the things that the show has to say.
Yeah, it also has a really, really good, exactly to your point about Jesse Armstrong's ability to craft not only one-liners, but like a very, very precarious line between like tragedy and comedy.
It's just
Succession really nails that in a way that I appreciate, and especially about an industry that I like. All of the different things that make up Waystar Royco, like the amusement parks, the digital media news arm, the television ad, like all of these things are tangential to my own life and my own professional experiences too. And I think that the show just does an incredible job of nailing a lot of like what I would have assumed were hyper specific references or things about media or things about the way that people are engaging with media or PR people or celebrities in a way that is just so spot on. So I'm so excited to get to dig more into that.
Yeah. And it's a show that, in my opinion, makes you weirdly root for people who are reprehensible, you know, which I think is a strength of the show. If it can make you care for and root for people who are like awful, you know, then it's like, oh, well, they're clearly doing something right to get you invested. But you mentioned the familial drama, and I think that's obviously also a critical part of it. It's like, what happens when there's a really weird family where everyone is a very distinctive personality and they get caught in this high stakes power struggle? So there's so many things about the show that I love. And what we're going to do here today on this episode of the podcast is we're going to talk about where we left off with the characters in season 3. And then we're going to talk about kind of what our hopes are for season 4 and what we like the characters we most want to see some resolution for, the plots we most want to see resolution for, what Jesse Armstrong has said about season 4. I don't think we're going to give away any spoilers. Like, it's our policy to not spoil any future episodes. But there is going to be a lot of rampant speculation. So you can look forward to that. So that is the plan for today. Now, before we even get to season 3, Kim, I just want to say that I thought seasons 1 and 2 of Succession were like masterpiece material, like all-timers. I think I've watched the entire season 1 and 2 through probably 4 or 5 times in its entirety, like every episode.
Love like, that.
Virtually every episode is a banger in that in that set of episodes, right? So like, I was just so taken with it, particularly like the plight of Kendall Roy. Like, that's what drove me through the first 2 seasons of the show. And season 3, I thought, was strong. There were several episodes in season 3 that were awesome, but overall, I do have to admit, I was starting to feel kind of some repetition in season 3 of like, how many times can we watch Kendall Roy metaphorically try to kill his dad?
Yeah.
Like, how many times is this like, oh, he wants to be in charge and he's going to keep trying to be in charge. You know, the arc of Kendall from season 1 to season 2 was so awesome of like,
yeah,
he tried to go up against his dad. He failed. He then ended up committing a horrible, like being involved in a horrible tragedy. Then he was like subjugated by his dad. And like, and it was, what was so weird about it was like Kendall Roy became like his best self when he was like his most efficient, effective self, when he was working under the thumb of his dad in a way that I thought was just really like upsetting. You know, it was like, to pull out a Game of Thrones reference, it's like,
Reek,
right. Ramsay Bolton and Reek. Uh-huh. And like, Reek is like weirdly more effectual when he's like, when he occupies a place in life that makes more sense for his personality. And then, you know, for so that was all incredible and beautifully done. And then for Kendall to come back, you know, at the beginning of season 3, pretty cool, but again, felt like a lot of the same dynamics are being repeated. That said, there are some all-time great episodes in season 3, but that's kind of my thoughts on seasons 1 through 3. And I guess I'm curious, like, if you had any thoughts on like the arc of the show until this point.
Yeah, I definitely feel you on that front of there were points in season 3 where I started being like, it's starting to get too difficult to watch everything go awry in such a similar way, right? Where it's like there's a lot of repetition of how close are we to a deal? What's the thing that messes up the deal right away? How do we pivot? How does that pivot now suddenly get interrupted? But for me, I think I was really, I feel like season two finale, right? Like the cliffhanger of like, oh, Kendall finally, you know, it's Theon escaping Ramsay. Like he got out the castle walls. Like this is so exciting. Yeah. And then, it was tough. It was tough to see, I think, in the earlier episodes, how fractured everything still was. But then those like final three episodes in a row, like really sucked me right back in. I think because we got a little bit more satisfaction out of the siblings finally having some catharsis together.
Yeah, the siblings at the end of episode, we'll talk about this a little bit more in detail, but they reunited, and obviously the tragedy is that like when they're finally brought together for the first time in forever, they're foiled, right? Like that's the ultimate tragedy of season three.
But I was kept afloat a little more than it maybe sounds like to you, because I felt a lot of emotional satisfaction in that payoff that I think we needed. I felt like I needed to see them try and fail a couple more times for it to be as satisfying as it was when all of the pieces fell into place. And yes, the rug got pulled out from under them at the last second, but I was still like, go guys. You go get your abusive father.
Kim is rooting for the younger, slightly less reprehensible Roys to take down older Roy, it sounds like, right, Kim?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like one of the issues of the whole show can be encapsulated when I think in season three, Logan Roy says, hey, maybe we should take another look at Pierce, the company they tried to acquire in season two. And Siobhan says something like, wait, we're doing that again? Like, it was almost like a meta moment of the character, like the actor saying, wait, we're going back to that plot line? Like, we already did that plot line, you know? I was like, oh, wow. It's like, they really feel like they might be running out of ideas here. So, but that said, there's some, like, finale is an all-timer. I think episode 5 of season 3 is incredible. Like, I think episode 5 of season 3 kind of sums up our society in many ways, in my opinion. That's the one with the shareholder meeting, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah. So let's talk about where we left off with the characters. Okay. Where we left off with each character at the end of season 3. If you'll recall, initially Waystar Royko was going to acquire a company named Gojo. And the way this is framed in the show is it was a merger between a tech company and a content company. Like Waystar Royko had awesome content, terrible tech. Gojo had awesome tech, terrible content. Now, I tried to think of like what the closest analogy for this might be in like the modern world. And the closest one I could think of was AT&T acquiring Warner Brothers, which was famously one of the most disastrous mergers in corporate history. And the idea was like AT&T is like, we're a tech company. We have cell phones. And we need your content, and somehow we're going to synergize, and it's going to work well together, you know?
Yeah.
Another recent analogy of a big acquisition like this would be Disney and Fox. Disney acquired Fox for the content. And obviously, like, Logan Roy, inspired by many people, but, like, clearly a Rupert Murdoch analog, in my opinion.
Yeah, and a lot of Disney, like, boardroom references, I believe.
Yeah, well...
have, like, snuck in there from time to time, right? Of, like...
As well as, like, I think the biggest one that snuck in season 3 was, like, Sumner Redstone and Sherry Redstone. That relationship is very similar to the Sandys relationship in the show, I think.
There's
all these analogs to what's going on in real life. I think that Waystar Royko was actually, like, explicitly positioned as an HBO or Warner Brothers analog because... earlier on in season 3, they're talking about using the Stargo app. The Stargo app, which is
HBO Go.
It's HBO Go. Like, no other company had a Go app or like a video streaming app called unless it was, you know, HBO Go had a thing. And it was not like the greatest user experience. And so there's a scene where Roman pisses on it, literally. So anyway, after initially being okay with the deal, the CEO of Gojo, Matheson, played by which Skarsgård is it?
It's Alexander. Right?
Alexander, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Played by Alexander Skarsgård. He seems initially open to being acquired by Waystar Royco, but then he makes some moves to back out of the deal, and then it becomes clear he doesn't want it to be an acquisition of Gojo. He wants it to be much closer to like a merger of equals in which he, Matheson, is in charge of the entire company. Logan agrees to this, and this would theoretically leave his kids in a challenging situation with a new CEO. And that's what the final episode of season 3 walks us through, is Logan's trying to sell his company to Matheson, and the three kids finally reunite, and they say they don't want that to happen, and they're going to try to stop the deal from happening. But at the very last minute, we learn that Logan has negotiated with his ex-wife to change some details of the divorce arrangement, and so basically the kids don't have the power they thought they have, and Logan can still make the deal. So that's kind of what ends up happening, is the kids, they're like, we're going to take down Dad. They go up against them. They fail horribly. It's painful for everyone involved. Of course, there's a few more details in there that I haven't mentioned, right? One of them is that Roman, throughout season 3, has actually gotten into his dad's good graces. He's actually, in my opinion, like, shown himself to be competent and started delivering, and like seems like he's almost in the inner circle with his dad.
Yeah.
And it's a very heartbreaking moment when Logan in the final episode says, "Hey, don't listen to these guys, Roman, like, come with me." And Roman declines, and then basically betrays his father, and it's really excruciating.
Yeah. And doesn't Logan, yeah, like, they're like all trying to kind of like get a barb in at Logan in the big final confrontation, and Logan kind of turns to Roman and is like, "And what do you have? Like, what are you gonna try and like convince me with?" And Roman's just like, love? And you're love? Like,
and he's like, "You came in here like trying to betray me, and now you're speaking of love," you know, like it's a brutal scene. Of course, like, there's some things I think, like, my perception, that are really realistic in Succession, and there's some things that are a little bit less realistic that you kind of got to gloss over. Like, one of the realistic elements, I think, in this last season was, like, how quickly the Gojo deal came together. From everything I have read and understand, that is a very normal time frame for a deal of this size. Like, you would think, oh, it must take months, but no, it's like, it comes together super, super quick sometimes. What did feel a little bit hand-wavy to me is like that, oh, they need a supermajority to do the thing, and then Tom betrays his wife and is able to like warn Logan, who then negotiates with his ex-wife to like get the supermajority clause removed or whatever. That taking place in such a short period of time feels a little bit implausible to me. Like, you know, I don't know about that part, but I'm taking the show on its own terms. I understand what the show is trying to say, which is Tom betrayed Shiv in one of the biggest moves of the entire season. When you realized this was happening, Kim, what was your reaction?
I felt a little proud of Tom.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because it was a rough season for Tom, for sure, between the like being singled out as like, "We're sending you to prison," and then just like no one really wanted to hear him talk about how difficult that was, of like thinking that his whole life was going to be upended any day.
Well, and like, particularly his wife didn't want to hear about it,
right? And she didn't want to hear about it,
and then like their little horrible dirty sex talk, which is her just basically saying the truth at his face, you know?
Yeah, as if it's like a kink shame thing, but instead mm-hmm. she's just being like, "I don't love you. I married beneath my station. Aren't we having yeah. fun now, honey?" Yeah.
Are we having fun yet? You know?
Yeah. And like the kid egg freezing conversations were also like just making me want to die inside. So it was, I feel like proud might be the right or wrong word. I don't know, but it was more like, oh, Tom's finally changing the terms of this,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to what it felt like they had been doing literally ever since their wedding night, which was like dancing around the fact that they're both miserable and doing this for both ulterior reasons and also maybe some sort of affection reasons. But it was just nice to see Tom like actually take a swing and do it in a way that caught everyone off guard, because like, I don't know, I was getting to the point where I was like, I no longer expect any great moves from you, Tom. You just mm-hmm. seem to like ping pong between getting kicked like a dog between your wife and your father-in-law.
I mean, it's a great sequence with him and Greg where he kind of makes the pitch to Greg and he says, you'd be heading away from the endless middle towards the bottom of the top if you come with me. And you think that Tom is there to say like, hey, if you betray Logan with me, but he's actually there to say, if you betray Shiv with me.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, I'm going to make a deal with the devil. And it's great to... It's a really rewarding experience to like watch the episode and then rewatch that scene again, like with a different context, you know?
Totally.
And then, of course, there's the final sequence of the episode where like Tom enters the room and, you know, I love like all the three kids feel like they've been betrayed by everyone. Roman has been betrayed by Jerry, you know?
Oh, that was also so hard to watch him like. Yeah. Look to her to be like, Mom,
yeah,
save me,
Mommy, no, please help. Yeah. And then, you know, Shiv has been betrayed by, you know, her mom, and then she later finds out her husband. Tom walks in the room and he's like, hey, what's going on? And then you can tell she's trying to like maintain her composure in front of him. And then he kind of like touches her on her shoulder, and then she kind of winces a little bit. You see her wince. And then it's like, that's the end of the series. That's the end of the season. That was it. And it was like, wow, what an amazing place to end of this, like to end on this betrayal, you know, it's just an incredible moment. And yeah, you've seen this guy get pushed to his limit and he discovered what his limit was. That's a really compelling and heartbreaking thing to watch.
Yeah.
So, where did we leave Connor and Willa at this point in time, Kim?
Having been freshly and very cringily engaged at a different wedding, right? He proposed to her. He proposed in the middle of another wedding, which is just
oh, well, wasn't it? Let's be. Poor it wasn't in the middle
Sorry.
Of the wedding itself. It
the
was
wedding
in
the, weekend.
Yeah, the wedding weekend. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So Connor and Willa are reluctantly engaged, it seems. It looks like
because
Willa,
after wearing her down, she says, fuck it, you know, let's do it, and then proceeds to drink heavily afterwards to kind of dull the pain. But
and he still has his presidential run happening. So they kind of, my understanding was like they left it with like, it seems like the Roys have finessed who the actual Republican player in this presidential race is, but mm-hmm. Connor is still kind of trying to be like, hey, Dad, what about me?
Right.
I can do it too, Pops, type of vibe.
Well, and, you know, he's kind of made out to be a laughingstock for very good reason, because he was like, he's polling close to 1% or whatever it was we heard earlier in the season. But like, that's actually really compelling to me because, you know, in 2016, we were probably around 70 to 100,000 human decisions away from having a different president for 4 years, you know,
yeah,
which is
a
like,
different electoral college, like,
down, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like 1% is actually like, I actually think that is like not an insubstantial amount in our current political environment. So, but yeah, so they're engaged to be married and he still wants to run for president. We'll see what comes of either of those things. If I had to just wildly speculate, Kim, I think season 4 is probably going to end with the Connor Willow wedding, is my, because like every, season has kind of ended, like season 1 ended with a wedding,
yep.
season 3 ended with a wedding, and so my guess is season 4 might also end with a wedding. Weddings are just really great consequential things that happen where a lot of people converge in one location, so it makes sense to like, but yeah, so I'm just putting out a guess, like episode, I don't know how many episodes will be in the new season, but like one of the last 2 to 3 episodes, I'm guessing we're getting a Connor Willow wedding. I'm calling it right now. So
yeah, like that's gonna be the big climactic event
yeah
for everything.
It's my guess. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe it's going to be episode 2 and it'll be like, why am I listening to Decoding TV podcast?
They're going to pull a Battle of Winterfell on us. but it's the Will and Connor wedding.
Yes.
Episode 3.
What else do we want to discuss? I mean, I guess Mattson is still in play. He's still a wild card. We have no idea kind of what the result, like we suspect that Logan has agreed to Mattson's terms. So Mattson's probably going to run whatever resulting entity occurs after the events of season 3, but we don't know how that's going to play out yet. But yeah, I think that's kind of most of our main characters. Anyone else you want to mention?
I would say just in terms of Kendall specifically, yeah. I feel like
tell me
this,
about Kendall.
I feel like season 3 was with Kendall, I think that like season 3 was, he was either going to die by suicide or accident, it seemed like, or finally get the help that he needs, is sort of how I was feeling the whole time, to the point that I thought in that the episode that ends with like the cliffhanger of him falling asleep face down in a pool, I spent like a week just seriously like coming to terms with the fact that like sweet sad baby boy Kendall just drowned in a pool in front of me, because I was like, that seems like, you know, the next step here. So I think in the finale what was really big for him was like he finally was able to actually tell Shiv and Roman what had been weighing on him this whole time and what was hanging over his head, and this thing that was, I think, making it very hard for him to move on in his life, which was that he thought that like Logan had the ultimate card to play on him. So I think Kendall getting out from under that was also, it was a little bit of a cliffhanger, but it also left me with Kendall in like a nicer place than I feel like I felt for him in previous seasons, where I'm like, yeah, you just lost again. But now we know that at least Shiv and Roman are there.
Yeah.
Like it happened to all of them at the same time for once, instead of it only happening to one of them and then like the division begins again type of thing.
I do think killing off Kendall would have been a really bold and impressive move if they had done it.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kendall may still die this season. Who knows? But... yeah, I didn't think that they would kill him off like that. That just felt like a little bit of a weird, like, because it was so vague. I was just like, when we talked about it on the Sweet Smell of Succession podcast, me and Tara Ariana, I was like, I bet, you know, if I recall correctly, I was like, I think there's a significant chance next episode they're like, boy, he almost drowned in the pool, you know, like, and then he's completely fine, which is kind of what happened.
Totally.
It just felt weird. Like, I don't think they would, it's just unlike the show to, like, kill off a character in such an ambiguous way like that, in my opinion, you know. But like if he's gonna die, it's probably gonna be like unambiguous, like boom, he's dead, you know, like he gets hit by a truck and then he's dead, you know, like so yeah. But the let's point out something the show has done really well, which is season one, obviously Kendall's actions helped to lead to the death of this waiter at Shiv's wedding. I love how in this episode it's pointed out, wow, Kendall really messed up Shiv's wedding in multiple ways. but
so dark.
His actions led to this, and then he had this thing hanging over him for the entire season two, like subsumed his whole will and personality to Logan. And that is a really hard thing for a show to pay off in a satisfying fashion. To have this thing weighing on, and it's like, how are you going to pay this off? Like, he's committed this horrible act, and then you're going to wait like basically two seasons to pay it off. And I think the show did an awesome job. Like, that scene when he confesses to his siblings is amazing, and then the interaction between them is incredible. Like, the way Roman tries to like downplay it,
we've all killed a kid.
Yeah, we've all killed a kid. Like, the way Roman tries to play it off is like, it's so like, oh, that's exactly. When I watch that scene, I'm like, that's exactly what that character would do in that situation. And there's a real satisfaction that you get from watching something like that play out on screen.
Yeah.
So I thought they did a great job of that. And like that whole arc, that's a hard arc to do for any show.
Yeah.
I should point out that it's possible the arc is not done yet, because at the end of season three, we did hear that somebody's making a true crime podcast about that waiter that died. So it's possible it will haunt Kendall in season four as well. We don't know. But yeah, if you are rooting for Kendall slash the Roy children to kind of team up together, I understand why season three and the ending of it might have been catnip for you. So
yeah, that was me. Absolutely. Because I think that I identified pretty early on, and especially when I was rewatching, I rewatched the first two seasons after seeing season three, and they really have seeded in this theme the entire time, which is that every time one of the kids gets close to like being successful, either within Waystar Royco or like outside of that, it's almost always another sibling that helps mess it up. And usually that's happening at the direction of Logan. Like Logan has successfully in every situation either reached out to Roman at the right time, reached out to Shiv at the right time, reached out to Kendall at the right time, and been able to like keep them fighting for the scraps so that way none of them ever have the power to actually succeed him and actually take over. And so that was – it definitely really landed for me to see them all get on the same page, be more emotionally honest with one another than they've been at any point, I think, previously, at least especially from Kendall's direction. And then, yeah, looking ahead into season four was when I was just like, what?
Oh, I'll just pause there. Like, it is Shakespearean, you know, like, yeah, that they all get together and then it's like, and then they are all betrayed. Like, that's, you're like excited. I'm like getting sad hearing you talk about it, because it's like,
I know,
you know,
but I'm like, I feel hopeful slash what I want out of season four is like, I cannot bear to see that fall apart again. I'm like, at least this time I want to see them get one thing done together.
All right,
because I truly believe that like that has been that like their kryptonite this entire time has been the constant division of desires. And Logan has done such a good job of manipulating them at all the right times to screw each other over. And I'm like, do not let him in your head. Like even the beginning of the freaking, that's how really season three opens, right? The stupid box of donuts, cookies. What is it that Logan sends? Like they are so close to all being on the same page and like really nailing the crap out of like this DOJ investigation, the PR spin on it, like whatever. And then you just see all throughout season three, which I think, again, to echo like some of like the frustrations, was like it fell apart so quickly at the start of season three that you were like, ah, not again. Like they're all just fighting. And then they got him back. And now I'm like, I swear to God, Jesse Armstrong and company, if you tear those siblings apart, like right away in season four, I'm going to be like, ah, no.
I don't know, Kim. Did Gilligan ever get off the island? is the question. So, okay. Well, anyway, that's where we are with each character. There's still way more to discuss. Before the fourth season begins, this is our opportunity to talk about what we want to see in this season, because Jesse Armstrong has announced this will be the final season of the show. And here's the quote that he gave to the New Yorker when talking about deciding to end Succession. He says, quote, "It's been a bit tortured, and I felt unexpectedly nervous about talking to you because it's all theoretical until this point. And I tried to keep it theoretical for a whole number of reasons. Who knows about the psychological reasons, but the creative ones were that it felt really useful to not make the final decision for ages. There's a promise in the title of Succession. I've never thought this could go on forever. The end has always kind of been present in my mind. From season two, I've been trying to think, is it the next one or the one after that? Or is it the one after that?" He's talking about seasons of show. Yeah. "I got together with a few of my fellow writers before we started the writing of season four in about November, December of 2021. And I sort of said, look, I think maybe this could be it. But what do you think? And we played out various scenarios. We could do a couple short seasons, two more seasons, or we could go on for ages and turn the show into something rather different and be a more rangy, free-willing kind of fun show where there would be good weeks and bad weeks. Or we could do something a bit more muscular and complete and go out sort of strong. And that was definitely always my preference. I went into the writing room for season four sort of saying, I think this is what we're doing, but let's also keep it open. I like operating the writing room by coming in with a sort of proposition and then being genuinely open to alternative ways of going. And the decision to end solidified through the writing. And even when we started filming, I said to the cast, I'm not 100% sure, but I think this is it, because I didn't want to bullshit them either, end quote. That's an extremely verbose quote to basically say he struggled with whether or not to end it this season. But what I like about the quote is he's like, we could have gone on for years, but I was like, let's end strong. And I love that impulse creatively, right?
Yeah, agreed. Especially for a show that has done so much in three seasons already, you know? I think that there are so many layers to what's happening with every character in every moment. And they really, as you've said, and as we keep talking about, they really nail the writing in terms of, like, you understand the emotional place every character's in at every moment and exactly what is pushing their buttons or making them feel good. And, like, I think that getting that in concentrated seasons and like one go out with a bang ending makes the most sense to honor that style of writing and density and thought that has gone into really building up all of these character arcs.
Yeah. I mean, by the way, it's pretty rare for a creator to come out on the record and talk about the final season like this. It happens sometimes, but it's like most of the time you don't know until like eight episodes of the season, or like the season has already started airing, right? And then it's like, it didn't get renewed. So it's like, oh, this will be the last season, right? But they have come out before the season's even started airing. It's like, this is it. And he talked about it because it would impact how the actors and everyone talk about it, like in press and stuff like that. And he wanted it to be definitive. He didn't want people to say, like, maybe we're going to come back. He just wanted everyone to know. But it's kind of paradoxical because on the one hand, my guess, I have not seen all the episodes. My guess is it's going to end definitively. That's my guess, right? It's going to end. I don't think it's going to end with a cliffhanger, is my guess.
No.
But it also feels like they weren't sure if they were going to end it until, like, they were done, like, in the filming or editing process. And they're like, yeah, this feels like the end. So it's probably going to be open-ended, is my guess. It's probably going to be, like, an ending where, like, it could have continued, but there's no cliffhanger. That's kind of my guess.
Right. Or, yeah. That it raises so many questions in my head about, like,
right,
well, then
yeah.
How I'm not gonna put out too many guesses because, yeah, you're right that it feels unique to hear a TV creator talk about a simultaneous uncertainty.
Yes, and certainty. That's right.
How they're ending a show.
Yeah, usually it's like I had a specific ending in mind and we are driving towards it for the last four seasons.
How I was going to get there.
Yeah,
we realized that this was now the time, or like we sat down to write the season and I, you know, we ended that final episode and I said, boom, that's it. Like the fact that they were still filming and he was like still, you know, yeah, in that slight decision-making mode means to me that there is something interesting. And yes, like you said, not like hyper definitive, but also it can't possibly be so broad and open-ended that it's not going to be satisfying. So I'm incredibly curious.
It's weird. And, you know, I think probably what's also playing a part is Succession is a very expensive show, you know, like, They need to simulate wealth, and that is expensive to see. It's not as expensive as being wealthy, but it's expensive to simulate wealth. And so, and it's not that popular of a show. Like, it's very big in your and mine circles, Kim.
Yeah.
But it's not a show that, like, everyone watches, or, you know, it's not as big as The Last of Us or anything like that. Like, a couple million people watch it every week kind of thing. But yeah, it's basically, I bring it up because it's an atypical way of talking about how the show ends, right? It's like, you put it well. It's like simultaneous uncertainty and certainty. So with that said, let's talk about some things we want to see in the final season. My big thing about the show as a whole is I am really sad about what they did with the character of Shiv Roy. In my opinion, like, If you go back to season one of the show, it's like a completely unrecognizable character. Like, it's like not even the same person. Literally the way she dresses and like does her hair is like all different than what she ends up being. The Shiv Roy from season one was a rejection of everything that the Roy stood for, right? Like, she was going to be working for a Bernie type. She, Bernie Sanders type. She like didn't want to go into news. She wanted to be, you know, she wanted to be in politics, and she, you know, she had a whole career separate from what the Kendall and Roman and Logan were doing. At some point, they decided, the show creators decided, hey, like, Sarah Snook is awesome, which I agree. Like, I will watch a movie that is bad just because Sarah Snook is in it. Like, I'm a big Sarah Snook fan. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I did watch one recently at Sundance. No, the movie was fine. It wasn't bad. But so they're like, but they wanted to get her into the mix, right? And they're like, okay, we want to get Shiv Roy into the mix. Because it's like, she's like such a compelling actor. It's more interesting if she's in the mix. But in my opinion, she has been largely ineffectual. Like, she's had a couple of wins. Season three, episode five, for instance, she stopped the company from getting taken over. That was a big one. But largely, most of her stuff has been like her trying and failing to do things. And that's been a double disappointment because, first of all, it's like, oh, probably the more interesting version of this character was when she was like rejecting the family values and doing her own thing. But then it's like, okay, well, if she comes in, I want to see her be a fucking killer. And like annihilate people left and right. And she's just like, no one respects her. Like, everyone's disrespecting her all the time. And so she's had a couple wins. It's not like she's completely a disaster, but I'm like, wow, that would be so interesting if like Shiv was a killer. Like, if Shiv was actually like, you know, she came in and she was actually extremely good at everything. Like, that would have been interesting. That's what I want for that character. Yeah. And that's not what played out. So I am kind of curious, like, is Shiv Roy going to be any more effectual in season four? I hope she is, because like, I've largely been disappointed with her arc in season two and three. Okay. Kim, your thoughts on Shiv Roy.
I see. It's funny. I don't disagree with too much of what you just
factually,
said.
Factually, you think what I've said is correct, right? But
well, it's that I think that that's a feature of her arc, not a bug, because I agree that the Shiv Roy in the early episodes is very different, but I think I think that, yes, she did seem to be contrarian, and I think that I identified with her a lot in those early episodes because I was like, heck yeah, black sheep of the family, like, going to fight for human rights and things, like, that is the right way to use your wealth.
Yeah. She's like, honestly, that Disney relative? Abigail Disney, right? She's like the Abigail Disney of the Roy family, basically. Right, yeah.
Well, she could have been, but I think it felt very intentional that once the opportunity presented itself, she abandoned a lot of those, like,
That part I didn't mind. I didn't mind her abandoning, and like, it's like, oh, season two, episode one, like, Logan offers her the kingdom. Like, that's like, oh, amazing moment. And then what I want to see is her like going in and just crushing. But instead, she's like flummoxed at every turn. Anyway, go ahead.
I think that is what white men do to white women in systems of power, right? Give them just enough sense of agency and involvement that they're obedient and they do what you want. But then you don't actually respect them, and you're not actually giving them a voice at the table, and you're not actually utilizing their skills and their input. I think that we saw Shiv realize that what Logan was offering her was not actual power, was not actual successorship, but was, we need another woman to take the fall for things and or weaponize her own womanhood against the accusers. Like, that was where I fully, like, that was where Shiv really broke my heart, was in season two, when she went on behalf of her dad to like the witnesses and stuff.
She talks this key witness out of testifying before Congress.
Yeah. And so I think I agree that I want to see Shiv stand in her own power a little bit more. And yet mm-hmm. I also know that like her version of power, or like what she's been conditioned to think is power, is just as twisted and messed up as the men in her family that she's been surrounded by her whole life. And so like, yeah, I think I agree that it's been hard to watch Shiv be ineffectual for so long.
Yeah.
But I don't see that as like, oh, they didn't know what to do with her character. Mm-hmm. I think it's we're giving you a very painful up close view of like this woman floundering to try to get power in a system that is just not going to ultimately actually give it to her. And then she turns around and beats up on Tom because mm-hmm. she like that's her biggest proximity mm-hmm. to power, is subjugating him, and then we see how horribly that goes also. So it's like
yeah that's fair. I guess I mean, if you go back to season one, it's like literally pretty unrecognizable, the character. Like there's that scene, that confrontation she has with Logan where he almost like threatens her life in that scene, and it's like the idea that she would go from that to like taking plausibly thinking she could take over the company like three episodes later, you know, it's just like, it just feels like they had really different ideas. That's my beef with it, is like, it feels like they had really different ideas for that character. They changed their mind, which is fine, but then it's like, you know, it's like, oh, we went from like this, what I, in my opinion, was like a formidable, credible force in season one to like kind of ineffectual in seasons two and three. But so we'll see where the Shiv Roy thing is going.
See if she can get points. Some of her.
Great points.
Get a little bit of her mojo back.
Yeah, about like her being foiled as a feature and not a bug.
Mm-hmm.
Roman. a lot of untied up loose ends with Roman, right, in this season. I think like we were all very excited about the Roman-Jerry relationship as being like an unconventional relationship in many ways on screen. But Roman has also changed a lot since episode one, specifically having a fucking wife and daughter.
I was about to say, I'm like, speaking of decisions that were made after things had already been filmed.
Roman had a wife and daughter in episode one of the show who are basically never mentioned again. And it's like, wow. go ahead.
Father Roman is not.
I mean, it's there's very few examples that are that flagrant in TV. You know, like I remember in West Wing. Did you ever watch The West Wing?
No.
In season one, there was this PR consultant named Mandy, and she was kind of like an annoying character. And literally, season two begins, and she's gone, and there is no explanation at all. Like, there's no one's like, "Hey, Mandy went off to go to the farm upstate." Like. Nothing. And so it's just like, it's a similar thing where like Roman is introduced with a kid in episode one of the show. And it's like, okay, well, we're never going to talk about that again. But I think in this case, the showrunners made the right decision. He is more interesting kind of on his own with his own issues to deal with.
Yeah.
But is there anything you want to see the show tie up when it comes to Roman?
Yeah, I think some like his love life has just been one big like chaotic open book so far. So I want them to land that ship somehow.
What would be a good landing? I mean, I felt like season three already landed the ship because basically his tendencies have come to light for his dad.
Yeah.
And his dad is a very old school, like men should have sex with women that are their age or way younger than them.
yeah, you know? That old moral,
and
moral
he's like,
boundary.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, he's very like, you know, I don't want you to be like some kind of sicko. Like, and he and his dad have that kind of, and it's like, it felt to me like, oh, his Roman's sexual proclivities have come to light. His dad has like kind of battened them down in a way that's obviously very unhealthy and very toxic for his child. But I don't know where else they have to go with that storyline. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think like, I guess Roman, like being out and proud as somebody who likes to you know, date women decades older than him.
I'm not helping you with that.
Yeah, I'm just like, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, what is the resolution? You know, I don't know where else I could go.
I mean, it's like, so one thought that I have, which thank you to the many fan cam editors of TikTok for illuminating this theme for me, but I've seen TikToks that show that Roman's big motif is dogs, right? Like, have you noticed this?
No.
So like Jerry calls him a slime puppy is like one of the most like, yeah, you know, earwormy nicknames. There's the whole bit where he recalls being forced into a cage and like eating dog food by his siblings at one point.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a quote from Connor where he says something about Logan of like, my dad never like, or no, his mom, their mom says that they couldn't have a dog because Logan never saw something like that he couldn't kick just to see if it came running back type of thing.
Mm.
And that, like, Roman to me is like a little, he's like the baby of the family.
Oh, it was Logan he was talking about kicking something. Yeah, that was Logan. Yeah,
sorry.
Okay, yep.
Yeah. But then it's like, you just see so many parallels with the way that Logan treats Roman and the way that Roman behaves that have this like very like dog motif throughout them. So I'm like, okay, what's the happiest ending for a dog is like a safe forever home. So I'm like, who is Roman? I mean, like, I think that like the closure is like, who's going to take ownership of Roman and genuinely just keep him safe and not flailing for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. And so like, Jerry would seem a little bit too on the nose for that to actually happen. I don't know if they're going to try to bring back Tabitha because she was like pretty central there with Roman for a while. And then she just sort of vanished and they've sort of kept the other love interesty people.
Yeah.
Like, well, mentioned.
I mean, just like you said with me, Kim, I think I disagree with your premise that any of these characters are going to get a happy ending, you know, like, but you're saying that's what you would like. That's what you would like, you know, and
that's what
fair.
The closure would look like.
Right. That's what the closure would look like. Okay. That's very fair. That's very fair, Kim. Well said. Well said.
But,
and to be clear, I'm very sex positive. Whatever Roman wants, Roman, ideally, you know, every human deserves, you know, whatever they want. I'm just saying like,
right.
I'm just saying, it's clear that that's not what his dad thinks. That's all I was saying, Kim, okay?
I
know that. I was reflecting my opinions.
No, I know that. I was trying. Yeah. It's hard to put into words because Roman has this weird thing where, like, especially, again, just really quickly, like, the whole Tabitha thing. Like, they were very explicit about him not having actual sex
Not having conventional penetrative sex is how I would describe it, right? So,
like, that there's an intimacy thing there for him. Of actual physical intimacy, and instead the Jerry thing turned into like a psychological kink thing that was never physically consummated. So I'm like, either he's gonna finally physically become intimate with someone, maybe that would be the wholesome closure / just Roman Roy having like a vanilla sexual encounter.
Well, you know, yeah, fair enough. I think we've covered this topic to a good amount. So, speaking of plot lines that were completely jettisoned in episode one, I think the show has never figured out what to do with Marsha as a character. You know, like,
totally.
Marsha was theoretically like on the verge of like trying to take over the company in episode one of the show, season one, episode one. And then she kind of like went away. And then she's like, maybe she's going to come back in season three. And like, they make a big introduction for Marsha. Marsha's coming back in season three. She's going to be by Logan's side for this big thing. And then like basically vanishes for 80% of season three.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what happened there, Kim. Like maybe like Chaim Abbas's schedule didn't work out with what they tried to do. Maybe they were like
pandemic things.
Yeah, pandemics. Maybe they wrote and they're like, actually, this is boring. Like the Marsha taking over stuff doesn't make any sense. You know, remember Marsha's son was going to be a big player in the thing too. So, you know, I'm curious if Marsha's going to get any resolution in season four, but it does feel like they had ideas that just never came to fruition for Marsha. But yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And then let's just talk about Kendall real quick. Like, what do we wish for Kendall, like, in this final season of the show? Because in my opinion, he's the main character of the show. You know, what do you think? Where do you think this is headed with Kendall and Logan and all the stuff that's happened, and Jesse Armstrong's cryptic remarks about how the term succession as the title is a promise that must be kept.
It feels to me like it would, like, I don't know. It almost feels too on the nose that Kendall actually succeeds
right
his father, right?
Yeah.
That's where this whole thing started.
It doesn't feel satisfying to me. Like, I don't know if I would feel satisfied. Now, maybe they'll figure out a way to make it satisfying, but like,
yeah.
When you say that idea, my body recoils. I'm like, that doesn't feel like a good ending to me, right?
Right. And part of me thinks that a good ending would be somehow tied to his public image. Cause that's mm-hmm. another big piece of his arc, is that he's been like really fighting against what the media
mm-hmm.
writes about him mm-hmm. versus like what he's actually doing within the company versus what they're writing about his father. Like, he's always been like hyper focused on his public image and like getting some sort of redemption tour. And it's interesting that by design, we don't really see the outside of that very often. Like, we don't see a ton of people actually talking about what they think of Kendall Roy, but like, you know, I just think of him like walking up to his like faux Met Gala thing being like, fuck the patriarchy, and like, good tweet, bad tweet. And like,
yeah.
All of these things where I'm like, I feel like a satisfying thing for him would be to see him feel some satisfaction out of like what his public image is now. Like, does he get some sort of exfoliation of all the bad mm-hmm. stuff? Does the server story come out? And similar to the way it went with his siblings, it doesn't go as horribly as he's imagining in his head that everybody finds out about this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there has to be some tie-in between his public image and this server, the waiter dying thing,
like that. Still, there's still some things to play out left with that.
Yeah, story. I don't feel totally closed on that.
Yeah, I think that's right. And again, they introduced that true crime podcast idea
right.
last season. Kendall's relationship with the media was a big subplot of last season, so it's possible that's going to come back in a big way. But yeah, what would a satisfying ending be for Kendall? You know, in season three, he tried to get out. He tried to like sell his share, and I actually think like that level. What would be a great ending for Kendall is to not want the things that Kendall wants.
Yeah,
in my opinion, right? Like, yeah. Can he achieve? You know, he wants to. He's always struggled to live. Did you ever see Inception?
I did.
The ending of Inception. He's like Pete Postlethwaite talking with Cillian Murphy. He's like, mm-hmm. you know, like, I'm not sad that you couldn't live up to me. I'm sad that you tried, you know? And it's like, it's like if Kendall, yeah. I'm paraphrasing, you know, but if Kendall were to stop trying, you know, like,
yeah.
that would be the success for him, is for him to realize like he doesn't need to be a tryhard.
Yeah. And in fact, like his life, he's maybe been ruining his own life
yeah.
for a dream that his dad put in his head,
right? Yeah,
that he didn't actually want. Look at us, Inception. That Logan, that is totally Logan on his deathbed in some fantasy version of Kendall's.
In a fantasy version. Yeah,
in a fantasy version yeah, of Kendall's yeah. dreams, the pinwheel.
Yeah. The other thing is, like, I am curious how they're going to play with if Logan's health is going to come into play.
Mm.
The first scene of the first episode of Succession is Logan Roy getting up in the middle of the night and peeing into a corner because he can't figure out where the hell he is. And it's like, and then he obviously has like a stroke, I think it is. And you know, he's come and gone, like his health has come and gone. He had a UTI in season three that caused him to be really non-lucid. And so it's like, you know, is like the succession going to happen because Logan dies? Who knows? I think... The problem for me is the show has played around with it so the show has danced with Logan dying so many times that I'm just like, I honestly think if they were going to kill him off, they should have killed him off sooner. But I think they just were like,
yeah,
we like the dynamic because you can only draw out that storyline for so long. Yeah. Although I guess, I don't know, Breaking Bad did it for 5.5 seasons. So like maybe, this show can do it too. But I am basically, that's a big question mark for me too, is like, where will Logan Roy's health come into play? Will that be what causes the succession that may or may not happen at the end of the season? We will see. All right, Kim. So those are some things we are hoping to see tied up. I want, like, my big thing is like, yeah, Shiv, I want her to get a satisfying arc, demonstrate who she really is. Kendall, we want to see him stop trying as hard. Roman, we want to see him taking care of a good forever home. Good forever home for Roman. And Logan, we'll see like what ending he gets. Is he going to live or die? I don't think he's going to be happy no matter what happens, you know? But yeah,
he's guaranteed that for himself.
Indeed. Okay. Anything else, Kim?
No, I'm all so right. excited to dive into this season with you.
As am I. And we hope you'll join us, folks. And of course, you can always find more episodes of the show at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. The way this is going to work, if everything goes according to plan, is on Sunday nights, right after the episode airs, decodingtv.com paid members will get the recap episode right away, right after the episode ends. And the episode should come out for everyone like the Monday afterwards. If you are a paid member at decodingtv.com, you are helping to support this podcast, making sure it keeps going, and you are getting ad-free episodes as well as early access. So thanks to all of our paid decodingtv.com members for making this show possible. And of course, as I mentioned, we definitely want to hear from you. decodingtv@gmail.com. Let us know what you're looking forward to. Let us know what you agreed with, what you disagreed with. Until Sunday night for Decoding TV members, Monday for regular members of the Decoding TV family, we will see you later with our recap of season 4, episode 1 of Succession. Goodbye.
Bye.